There you are. You're back.
Did I
Sorry.
go away? Oh, I said a really funny joke too. I promise you. You'll just have to believe me.
And this is Gaytriarchs.
Okay, so I went to the park with friends of the show, Rob and Carl, and their son.
Oh, yeah.
And we were having fun. And I was reminded of something that I want to double down on.
Okay.
I don't like OPKs. We've talked about this, right? I don't like other people's kids. I don't care how cute they are. I don't care what they're doing. They annoy me by just existing. Okay? Right. I'm not. That doesn't include like people I love.
Sure.
But I, you know, kids should exist. But what I learned this weekend at the park was I also hate OKPs.
The kids' parents.
I hate other kids' parents more than other people's kids. Because I was at the park and we were, you know, we had our bags or whatever. And I'm sitting there having a snack with my daughter. She's eating goldfish out of a bag. And this girl walks up and she goes, "I want some." And I said, she was like 8, 7, older. I said, "Oh, well, then you should ask your parents to get you some." Like, I was being shady already.
Yeah, you were.
She was like, "Well, look right there." I said, "Yeah, she's eating her goldfish." She's like, "Do you have any more?" I'm like, "Am I being asked for a dollar by a homeless person in Manhattan? What is happening?" And I said, "No, that's all I have." And then she goes, "Well, can I have the rest of hers?" Bitch, no, you can't. You can, and in fact, you could go fuck yourself, because what are we doing here? And also, where are your parents? And what is going on? And so this girl's parent comes over and she's like, "Oh, is she bothering you?" And of course, I'm like, "No, she's just
of course
really into
not.
Goldfish. And right. then she starts, and then in front of her parent, she starts going through our bags.
Wow.
And I look at the parent kind of being like, because I'm not going to go, "Hey, bitch, get your hands out of my bags." But I'm also looking at the parent because, like, if this was my kid steals shit all the time. I'm like, "Hey, like, honey, this is not ours," whatever. She right. just stands there and watches her daughter pick through this bag. And I'm like, what is
really?
Happening here? What is happening here? So I was like, "Hey, can I get you something?" Anyway, I like led our way out of it, but I'm just doubling down. I don't like other people's kids, and I don't like other kids' parents. So basically, everybody who exists in the world, get the fuck away from me.
Yeah, you are so many levels of cranky t-shirts with cats on it that say, I'm not a morning person, today's not your day, or, you know, some shit like that about like, basically, I only like two things in the world, myself and my cat kind of thing. I mean, you are several levels of get off my lawn right here, but you are so right. And it's never ultimately the kids that we don't like, which is of course all of the others. It's not their fault that they're assholes. It's absolutely the parents' fault.
Well, and usually, I mean, my kid steals now. Did I tell you this? He's stealing now. He's like stealing my teacher's, like, or his teacher's stuff. He at swim class, I saw him grab the bracelet of his swim teacher and put it in his hands. My kid is actively committing.
He's a kleptomaniac.
He's actively committing crimes. But the second I see it, I'm like running down there. I'm like, this is not what we do, right? So maybe it's the kids, maybe it's the parents, but it doesn't matter. I
want
them away from it.
You made your kid stop, and you are teaching him that he cannot do this. He cannot rifle through somebody else's bag, and he
in
can't
front
steal,
of them.
And
when they said you can't have any more goldfish,
he cannot steal jewelry off of somebody's wrist. Yeah. That is some Oliver level shit right there, though. Like Artful Dodger. You know, as a complete aside, you in your mind telling yourself, "Hey, go fuck yourself, kid." It reminds me of a story that I know about a very good friend of mine who I don't think listens to the pod, and he definitely should. He was a Santa Claus, a neighborhood Santa Claus one time on a fire truck. This is a super New York story where our local fire truck, you know, they needed a local volunteer and they needed somebody to dress up as Santa, and they would go around the block and they would show up. And he said that it was a raucous affair, and all of this firemen were just like, they were having a great time and just very, very raucous, right? They were going back and forth with all of the F-bombs and just, like, you know, living their best lives as we're the heroes who would get to ride in with Santa Claus. And my friend steps out of the cab of the fire truck and he hears a kid go, look, it's Santa Claus. And the fireman goes, hey, kid, go fuck yourself. as Santa Claus steps out and realizes that it's his child who had just said, hey, look, it's Santa Claus. And he said, he wasn't even ho-ho-hoing at that point. It was just straight on guffaws. So telling kids to go fuck themselves is also hilarious, frankly.
That's a good story.
So I spent a lot of time in our last episode. I was telling you about how recently I was a chaperone on a spring break trip. And it was fascinating because in one regard, I was trying to stay as hands off with my own kids as possible, because part of the trip was the fact that they got to be more independent, right? But it was so fascinating to watch other kids behaving either with their kids or with their parents or without, mostly without. And the level of parenting that I wanted to do that was mainly just me saying, get off my lawn, which was mainly them getting off their phones. And the rampant use of cell phones. And you just want to be like, kids, come on, you're sitting next to each other, but you're on a vacation without your parents and you're in another state. And oh my gosh, it was another level of me trying to micromanage absolutely every aspect of my life, including other people's lives. But I don't think there's much to be said there, except that phones, man, phones, phones. Have you thought about when you're going to let your kids have phones? Because it's a thing, dude.
You know, last episode, you made fun of me for being a boomer, for trying to set up our Facebook group. And you just went on an 8-minute rant about kids be looking at their phones.
I mean, it is so frustrating. But nevertheless, what would you do?
I don't know. I'm so far away from that, luckily, which I know will come sooner than I'm ready for. Mm-hmm. But I don't know. We've talked with a lot of guests recently who've talked about, you know, I think last week with Nick, where when do you give your kid a phone? How much can you access it?
Yeah.
So I'm just going to, like most of my health concerns, just ignore them until they become a bigger problem.
Hey, I've got some gay news for you, all right?
Ooh.
First of all, what does the word Bundestag mean to you?
It sounds like a sex position in Berlin, but I'm actually not
totally
sure.
Well, it is basically a sex position in Berlin. It's the lower house of government in Germany, like their House of Representatives. Oh, okay. And they have recently they passed a law recently that makes it easier for people to change their names, their pronouns, and their gender identity. So like a little good news and being like, hey, you know what? Let's just let people live, right? And our guest a couple of weeks ago, Carl with a K, was talking about how the Germans, they are just so live and let live. And I find it, it's a little bit of news from the Bundestag. But meanwhile, news from Florida, David.
I'm sorry.
So as I was going through some news, the headline was basically Matt Gaetz nude selfies. And I'm like, well, I want to see that because the dude has great hair and I'm kind of curious, right? Well, no, it was just a teaser because scumbag is finally probably going to be taken to task for sharing selfies of women that he's been with, maybe men too, but like sharing the selfies. Like, what a scumbag, and he definitely needs to go down for that. If he's done it, I mean, you know, innocent until proven guilty.
But I guarantee you Matt Gaetz's dick is medium to small, but with way too much hair. Do you know what I mean? That the cock to hair ratio is off on him. I could smell it a mile away.
Then finally, though, my favorite story of the week is that there's a song, a pro-war Russian song that gay trolls have turned into a gay anthem.
Of course we
did. Just being like,
of course we did it.
We're going to take it. We're going to take this and double down and make it way better and way gayer and take away your pro-war bullshit. So I think as a play out music, we'll need to find a way to actually stream that song as a new gay anthem, because war sucks and Vladimir Putin sucks, but gay anthems rule. So
I love how gays will turn anything into a dance hit. I think that's so fucking clever. I love that. You know what isn't very clever?
What is not very clever, David?
Our top three list.
Gaytriarchs, top three list. 3, 2, 1.
I think this is very clever. I'm excited. Tell us about it, David.
So our top three list this week are the top three Kool-Aids that you drink. And by Kool-Aids, I mean, I don't know, conspiracy theories. Is it goop? Like, what are the things that you're like, this is stupid, but God, I just can't help myself. All right, so I'll start. Number three for me, supplements. I love a protein drink. I love a magnesium pill. I love a vitamin C. I love an emergency. We have two baskets in our kitchen full of supplements that I never take, but I can't help myself. I see a TikTok.
But you don't even take them.
I forget, but I'll see a TikTok that says, if you take magnesium, you'll lose 20 pounds. And I'm like, right. Boom, I'm at CVS immediately. So number three, supplements. Number two for me, Costco / buying in bulk. Oh, man. Oh, do I love a bulk buy? If it's like you can get a second one for a little bit less, I'm buying 10. Our basement, you can't see, this is my quote unquote recording studio, but in the other room is literally just Costco storage. It's wild. Number one, the top Kool-Aid that I drink, aliens. Aliens.
That is not Kool-Aid, though. That has got to be true.
Well, but welcome, do you mean welcome to the fold, my friend. Here's your Kool-Aid.
You mean little green men walking around with eyeballs and mouths?
I mean all of it. You know, like ancient bacteria. Aliens? Do you know ancient aliens? No. That show is just chaos, and I love it. I fucking love it. So, yep, number one, aliens. What about for you?
I want to believe in it, too. I want to believe in it, too. Yeah. But here's the three things that I believe in that come to mind. Number three for me, AOC. I want Alexandra.
Is she a Kool-Aid? I guess she's a Kool-Aid. You're right. She's a Kool-Aid.
I have definitely.
She's popular. And yeah.
I've drunk an awful lot of that Kool-Aid, and I think she's a badass, and she's so brave, and I want to believe that she's the real deal. And so I feel like that's kind of a Kool-Aid that I have drunk.
Yep.
Number two, recycling. I am so afraid. Yeah. I'm so afraid it just goes to a landfill, but I am really devoted to it, really devoted to it. But very good environmental friends of mine, actually a cousin who's the smartest person I know, is like, yeah, it doesn't matter. So, and he's a super environmentalist, and he's like, yeah, I just don't even bother anymore. And I'm like, you don't bother recycling? God, I hope it's not a Kool-Aid, but sometimes I wonder, is it a Kool-Aid? Number one for me, not my kids.
And we will be right back.
Hey, Bar and Grill fans, it's Jim with Madhouse Bar Talk, where me and my co-hosts sit around and talk about the things going on around Madhouse Bar and Grill in Elyria, Ohio. The whole conversation is unscripted, uncensored, and unedited. Anywhere where you stream podcasts, just remember, Madhouse Bar Talks, baby.
That is perfect, number one. Not my
I'll leave it at that.
Yeah, you don't need to explain it. That is so fucking good. All right, what do we got next week?
Next week, I want to hear more about you, David. Okay. I want to hear about your three most annoying traits from your husband.
He's going to love this question. Our guest this week is a mother of three children, one born through IVF, and has been a gestational surrogate for not one, not two, but three families. She's also the founder of Sero Connections, on the Men Having Babies board, and all-around overachiever. Please welcome to the show, Megan Hall-Greenberg. Hi, Megan. Guys.
Good morning. Thank you for making us feel like lazy shits, Megan.
Well,
thank you.
I don't know about overachiever right now. I'm that tired mom business owner. That's my look lately. So,
but that's what I mean is like that you not only founded Sero Connections, which is one of the biggest agencies in the country, but also you're on all these boards. You have children. You're doing surrogacy. Like what the fuck? Yeah.
A husband. So I think, does that count as fourth child?
Yes.
No, that's a second full-time job for sure.
Okay. Well, there you go. I just got my hair colored a couple days ago because it was almost gray. And I was like, that's enough. I'm ready to go to Berlin. Can't look like this.
This is going to keep me fueled is my my totally natural meant to be hair color. So what does fuel you, though? I mean, you live a life of passion. What does fuel you?
Right. Well, I actually own a couple of businesses, and then my husband has a business. So we're like really spread thin on top of kids and life and, you know.
I bet tax time is chaos at your house.
I just keep handing it over to the CPA. it's just crazy chaos all the time. And now we go into speaking season and my kids compete in their world championship cheerleading things. So then I have to go to Berlin for 48 hours. So the next few weeks are going to be a little bit crazier than usual. And I'm excited, but I'm going to be tired.
But I imagine these are all things that you choose to do because they make your life full.
For sure. I think there's a balance though, right? So sometimes I don't choose to get calls in the middle of the night, or I don't choose to deal with really angry, frustrated, sad, intended parents, or angry surrogates, or hormonal surrogates, or a staff issue. Like, there's lots of facets that you have. And, you know, under my purview, if you think about it, between, you know, my husband's shop and my other business and surrogates and intended parents, that's like maybe 400 or 500 people at a time kind of relying on me to answer my phone and text messages at all hours of the day worldwide. So yeah. I think I've just lived in this hopped up caffeine world until about 3:30 or 4. And then depending on the night, I either go to bed at 6 or my husband makes the best lemon drop martinis and we play Yahtzee. So
nice.
You know, I just balance.
I mean, that's basically sex in your 40s is a lemon drop martini and Yahtzee, if I'm being totally honest.
You know what? It is. It actually has kept our marriage together. So,
yeah. And I bet those like middle of the night calls are, those texts aren't like, hey, just want to check in and say, you're doing a bang up job. Night night. Like, that's not the texts and calls you're getting. You're getting panicked, emotional calls, right?
Right. Or, you know, my staff in Europe are getting intended parents screaming at them and they're WhatsApping me to be like, I need help. And I'll have to get up and go answer an email like on a computer where I have to think about it. It's the bad calls. A lot of things happen that are bad in our industry at night, whether it's birth or something, some complication. So, you know, I'm involved in a lot of that stuff to kind of, because I've been doing this for so long. I think that's also like, I'm on autopilot, right? After almost 14 years, and I've been helping for about a year before that, like just people before I started my business. But 14 years is a long time, you know, and I'm only 29. So
yeah,
so you're, weird.
You're barely, you're not even in your 30s yet, which is just wonderful.
It's unjust that you've gotten gray hairs that you have to color over at only 29, but you are 29. Making it work for sure.
Amen.
Yeah.
Now, wait a minute. You also, one of your other business is cheerleading, right? I mean, as a cheerleading, taking kids to international competitions, right?
Yeah. Not international. The most international we get from the West Coast is, for cheerleading anyway, is Florida. That's our, like, world.
Listen, I grew up there. Florida is another planet. Like, that's, like, interplanetary. Yeah.
Yeah. And every year we have to go and spend 2 weeks there between my little one is in the youth summit and then all my other kids. I have another child, but she only cheers for 2 days. But my gym is there for a week competing. So I want to make sure I'm there for my athletes and my parents and my coaches and all that. So that's 2 weeks out of my life. And then I have to go to Berlin on a Thursday afternoon, and I come back on Sunday morning. So for men having babies, which I was going to say, that is,
of course, that isn't just for pleasure, but there will be some pleasure there, hopefully.
Yeah, I think I'll just be a zombie for 48 hours. I've kind of resolved to that in my mind, and I'll live off of lemon drops and coffee. Europe has the best coffee, so why not there?
As we've gone over your overachieverness too, I do have to ask, you have to have an inordinate amount of patience on the surrogacy side. How do you keep your patience?
I don't know if it's patience, right? I think it's experience, to be honest. And I'm really authentic. So a lot of people say in my world is you either really love Megan or you really frickin' hate her. Really
and we haven't decided yet. We will decide at the end of this episode which one of those we choose. So we'll have a TBD on that. Yeah.
Perfect. Mm-hmm. It's okay. You're going to love me though. But it's because I tell the truth. And some people in this surrogacy world want, it's not all rainbows and unicorns. The people that love me are the ones that will come to me and say, this happened. I need your honest. Are we doing something wrong? Is she doing something wrong? What is the right thing? And I'll always tell them what is the right thing and how I see it, right? Not only am I a surrogate, I've been doing this for 14 years. I've kind of seen almost everything. I learned something new probably every day, but I see a lot. I've experienced a lot of unfortunate and situations and really amazing situations, right? Mm-hmm. So I think it's, you either love me or hate me, and I'm okay with that. The ones that also aren't authentic to themselves starting this process, that they actually don't know what they want. They know they want babies, but how do you get there? And I just tell them the hard truth. Like, it's going to cost. There's variables. Like, there's experiences that we don't see normally. Like, is it embryos? What clinic are you using? You know, I tell people our experience. I don't tell them where to go. I give them lots of choices. What is our experience with attorneys and clinics and specific doctors at those clinics? What is our experience? Are they great on communication? What's their donor database? Like, I give them lots and lots of choices, but I'm very honest and transparent with them.
Mm-hmm. So for those of the listener out there who don't really know what a surrogacy agency does, can you give us the quick, like, Cliff's Notes top line of, like, what an agency does in the surrogacy journey?
Sure. So I'm going to talk about what our agency does, because a lot of agencies will get to the point to get you pregnant, get you through the process, so your surrogate's pregnant, and then they just drop off. And then you're kind of like floundering, and you have to pay thousands more than our agency, right? Where we really help you from, even if you're not with our agency, from the beginning at a Men Having Babies conference, you're 2 years out, let's say, in planning. You want to know what kind of budget, what is the trends in the industry, and then talk to us, what about the clinic we choose? Like, we should be an educational resource, whether it's intended parents, I don't say the industry because everybody does things so differently, and then also surrogates. We want to make sure they're educated on the process, the financial side, as well as the emotional, mental, physical side of what you're about to go through, because there's so many facets, right? And sometimes I have an intended mom going through it right now, and it's just like she calls and cries just because she's already done egg retrieval and everything. She's just like, this process is so daunting. And if I didn't have you, I don't know what I would do. And these are middle of the night WhatsApps from, you know, Australia, but
yeah,
it's really, we help from that very beginning all the way through matching, legal process, the clinical side. We have a nurse on staff that walks with your surrogate and you guys to kind of, I call it, can you make it down? Like, I don't understand this legal or this medical jargon nonsense, and nor does intended parents. So she will put in, you know, making it down and explain it. All the way through transfers, and, you know, we send out little gifts and little personalized things. We're there for surrogates. We have an internal support system for your surrogate, internal support system for your IPs. So other IPs, we can introduce them and have like mentors, right? And then all the way through birth, delivery, and getting you back home, whether that's international or domestic. Mm-hmm. So, and usually we get to follow up or, you know, see them after the babies are born, or we'll see them at a Men Having Baby event, or if we go, let's say, to Paris or Europe, we'll have a little get together with all of our IPs and babies. And, you know, I get to see, I'm so lucky, I get to still see pictures and everyone from when I first started. So,
and why did you start Sura Connection?
Sure. Pretty easy. I was with an awful agency for my first experience. Awful. And it's funny because I actually sit on the board with them now and I can't really look at them. I wasn't the awful one. There just wasn't a lot of support for me. And I am not high maintenance at all. I worked full time as a single mama too. And I didn't need a lot of guidance. I felt it was very IP centered, where when I did come to them, they were like, well, you just need to do what the IP said. And I'm like, no, I still have to parent my children and work and do all these things. My life shouldn't change that much. I'm taking care of their baby. They need to trust me on that. Right.
I feel like that's such a nuanced take on one of the hardest parts, in my opinion, of the surrogacy journey is this. You have an IP and a surrogate, right? And there is a relationship there. And sometimes everyone can feel like the hero of their own story, right? So when the IP is like, no, you're doing a service for me, and the IP and the surrogate is like, I'm doing a service for you, but it's not like, I'm not a hired hand, right? I am a human being and we're doing this together. And I find that as a very nuanced, difficult relationship, because you are both doing something for the other person, but inevitably the baby's going to go home with the IP. And I can see how the IP can get so self-centered in like this baby, and forget that there's a human carrying this person who has a husband and dogs and lemon drop martinis. Maybe that's why you didn't have a good experience. Too many lemon drop martinis while you were pregnant?
No, but man, there were days that I wanted to, for sure. You know, and I think I always say this is a very mutually beneficial situation for everybody, right? Yes, they are doing a service, but they are not transactions. So yeah. With our agency, we are far more personal, right? I don't think I would ever sell to a big conglomerate or to anyone at this point. I'd probably pass it down to, you know, my staff before that would happen. The reality is we don't take on a lot of clients that are based transactionally, right? Mm-hmm. So that see this arrangement and this, I always like to call them projects because I'm the project manager. Mm-hmm. As transactional. They're humans. Everybody's humans on both sides. They're going to have hormones and emotions and then sleepless nights when the baby comes, like your relationship's going to change, right? So yeah. That's why we have a support system in-house that's separate. So the intended parents have their one support person. And again, all my staff have actually been surrogates or intended parents multiple times.
They get it.
They wow. They understand. They've walked the walk. And that's how we usually like match up when interest card comes through. We'll match up, you know, is it a traditional couple, mother struggling with infertility? I have someone on staff for that, right? Mm-hmm. I've been just straight IVF, right? I can take mm-hmm. those on. I have my gay daddies on staff. Mm-hmm. So it's very pointed in how can we support you best as their individual package, right? And then your surrogate, same thing. We match them with the personalities, where they're located, things like that, what they've been through or what they're looking for. Because some people come in and say, hey, I'm honest. I'm just doing it for the money. If a relationship happens naturally, great. But I'm here to help a family and I want a house, right? Mm-hmm. And that's their down payment. That's why I did it. So I understand it. Like, let's be honest mm-hmm. about it, right? Mm-hmm. But there's also some intended parents that'll come in and have this vision of, it's going to be sunshine and rainbows and we're going to go on family vacations. And then they realize when the baby's there that they are focused on the baby and they're still in touch with the surrogate, but it's not what they promised or not what they thought it would be as far as that relationship goes. Right. And when you ramp something up for a surrogate like that, it's really a letdown for the surrogate. What I always tell people is just be authentic, right? If you don't know what that end result looks like or that relationship looks like, just say it. Let it naturally evolve, or if at some point it goes sideways, at least you guys can walk away with mutual respect, right? Because it is mutually beneficial and you did your parts and here's this beautiful human now in the world that they get to raise, right?
Totally.
I hope that made sense.
I was curious. No, that makes perfect sense. And then surrogacy laws differ so vastly from state to state, but then also internationally. And I'm so curious to know, what's it like to work in Europe? Are there huge bureaucratic barriers to push through? Or moreover, are there cultural barriers to push through?
I think both, right? I think it's both. It's so interesting to me as a woman that in Europe, you go and you can watch basic sex on TV or, you know, pretty hot and heavy things you would never see in the US, right? But then they talk about women selling their bodies and basically being prostitutes because they're giving birth to someone who cannot have a child. Like, who are you? It doesn't make sense to me, right? You know, I was so happy many, many years ago when the law passed in France just for same-sex marriage. Right. I was so excited. I was like, that's going to change our industry. And look at all these people that can have babies now. And France is one of the most restrictive place in Europe. Right.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
It actually, if you walk the steps in, and obviously my European daddies know each laws and attorneys in each country that help reintegrate baby, but and how that works on birth certificates here and then how that reintegrates back to their home country. It's just really, it's not daunting. We know the process now and we have it down pretty pat, but it's for someone coming in and not having that agency, the experience with the agency, it's a long road to try to navigate that by yourself, right?
You and I talked a little bit in the pre-interview about your journey as a surrogate. And I want to talk through a little bit about that. And then obviously bringing me to the bigger story here, but tell us a little bit about your surrogacy journey.
Sure.
As a surrogate, first, I mean. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. So the first two, I actually never saw the baby once the baby left, right? I was I am very business minded. It is me doing a service for them. I think I got disappointed after the first one just because they made all these promises to my kids. And so I was really disappointed in that for my children. They were like, well, where's the baby? They said we would come and they would come and visit us. And I had to explain that to very small children. Right.
And was that something that the IPs made were like, you know what? Now that we have a baby, we definitely don't want Megan to see this baby. Or was it like we got swept up and we just ignored her and we forgot? Like, it feels weird to like, I can understand the first hour or two. Maybe it like slips your mind because you're so overwhelmed and there's measurements and blood and everything. But it would seem like have to be purposeful for them to leave the hospital with a baby and never having. Yeah.
Yeah, and I think it was really disappointing because once this is now my first surrogate baby is going to be 15 in July. So I'm so happy for them. And they never thought they would have the baby. It might have been cultural because they were from Africa originally. I was living in Houston then. But I think back then it was almost so taboo, right? Mm. And not even talk about same-sex marriage. This is a traditional couple. It was their embryos. Like, and I think the shame from the mom, once she got that baby, she forgot where she got it or how she got there.
They live in Africa, though, you're saying.
No, right? They live in Dallas. So they were just a few hours away.
So they could have had a picnic once a year to come together if they had really wanted to.
For sure. Yeah. But also, you know, I think that was a big life lesson, too, right? It was, you know, just protect your heart and just go into the next one. Cause I loved the process and seeing the joy in their eyes for the first time when they held that baby. It's addictive for surrogates. It is so addictive. And to be honest, I obviously sitting on men having babies and being around my daddies all the time. I was like, gosh, could have, you know, why'd I have to lose my uterus? I could have just had one more for a set of gay daddies, right? Just to have a different experience. Going into number two, they were from China and it was kind of an independent journey. And it was just very, in my heart, it was very transactional. Yeah. I got to see him. They landed as I was getting discharged. So I got to spend a lot of time with the baby. And I saw them. They spent the first night at our house because my mom was like, they don't know what they're doing. And they just flew in from Japan. Like, it's Japan. And they're like, I'll stay and up so they can get a good night's sleep, right? So they stayed with me the first night, but after that, I didn't even see them when they were in Houston. So again, it was just more like, okay, I did it. I got to see it again. Like he's cool, right? The third one is totally opposite, they're from Austria. I'm actually so close with the intended mom. We go on New Kids on the Block cruises together. She'll fly in.
Wait,
fly
I'm sorry, in what? There is such a thing as a New Kids on the Block tour.
Yes, it is the time of my life.
Oh my God. That sounds amazing, actually.
Yes, I love them.
Okay, right on.
She'll come in. It's usually every other year. And here in Portland, we get New Kids on the Block, you know, tickets. And they'll fly in for the week and, you know, her name is Iduna. She's not a baby anymore. Gosh, she'll be 10. Show her, hey, this is where you're born and this is Megan. And even though she only speaks German, my kids play with her and like she's all grown up now, right? So I get to see her. And that was her pushing. That was the intended mom wanting that for her daughter. Mm-hmm. So that was a great experience. Mm-hmm. It's fine if they, I actually resolved, like if I don't talk to anyone ever, at least I did my part, you know, I got to help three families and who am I to say what they do with it? So,
So tell us, and then what happened?
Okay. So cliff notes, because we could probably have a whole podcast just on this.
Yeah.
Well, my 9-year-old now, David got to meet her in the pre-call. She was actually my surrogate baby. Around 18, 19 weeks, I had been diagnosed with placenta increta, where the placenta grows into the uterine wall.
Okay.
And so I involved, okay, let's get the parentage in order because baby could cut, like, we just didn't know. And, you know, my doctor's like setting me up for death, right? She's, you know, you could die. There's probably going to be 20 people in the room when you deliver. And We're going to, you know, if you have any bleeding or anything, you are in the admitted in the hospital and you don't get out. Like, so I'm trying to relay all of this to my intended mom. She was a single intended mom. And she just stopped contacting me.
Holy shit.
Didn't respond to attorneys, doctors. Oh my gosh. Talk about the worst 14 weeks of my life from there. 14, 16. So like it got down to the wire and, you know, obviously being in the industry, I have lots of friends that are attorneys and they're like, we don't see this.
Like, no, no way. Yeah. Right. And I feel like this is probably one of the biggest fears for gestational surrogates, even though it almost never happens. And then you are sitting here and you're like, I'm being ghosted with this woman's child inside of me.
Also, I'm like super experienced in this world. Yeah. Like, how is this happening to me?
Right. And then all I kept saying was, I quit my job at Nike to do this business because of this journey. Like, this was going to be the income I lived off while I started my company. Coming down to the wire, one of my attorney friends says, you have three choices. In the state of Oregon, you can adopt her out, you can give her, put her in the system, or you can keep her. And I was like, I don't want to keep her. Right? No way. I'm already a single mom. I'm starting this business. Oh my God, I'm going to get killed on social media for whatever. And I didn't want any more children.
Yeah.
Two was enough.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
And so I went to my kids. And at this point, I'm actually setting things up to make sure that everything's in place. Life insurance. Like as a single mom, I made sure I'm very, very clear in what that looks like. God forbid if something happened to me. Doctor tells me we're going to deliver at 33 weeks. And I said, oh my gosh. And then on top of that, I'm going to have a NICU baby and like all these things. Right. And so it came down to the wire around 31 weeks where I sat my mom and my sister down because they didn't even know I was pregnant. Yeah. I have a really big butt. So.
and embrace it.
Yes. That's fine. How do you think I got my husband?
No, big butts are in.
So I sat them down and they were both like, okay, so and then I was like, this is what I planned, blah, blah, blah. I'm hoping she comes out of the woodwork. Like everyone's still trying to contact her. They're like, okay. So then after that meeting, my mom and sister are in shock. Mm-hmm. I sit down with the kids. So I start talking to them about, you know, mommy, they knew mommy had a baby in her belly. They're so good about it. Justin, it's like, oh, okay. It's a Wednesday, right?
Yet again, mommy's doing her thing.
Mommy keeps getting knocked up.
Yeah. 10 years straight pregnancy, right? That's why I drink all the lemon drops now. Uh-huh. Making up for lost time. So sat them down and I said, so mommy's going to have this baby. She's not going to have a place to go. I think we're going to give her to a different family because they knew about the woman I was caring for, right? Mm-hmm. About her. They hadn't met her. And so my son, who's probably 8 or 9 at that time, maybe 10 at the most, he looks at me and I'm crying, right? Because I'm saying, if something happens to me, this is where you'll go and you'll go to Titi's house and Guam will be there. And like, I'm talking end of the world death stuff. And then here, let me sprinkle in this baby situation. And my son just looks at me and was like, no, she's going to come home with us. And I said, I'm sorry, what? That's from a 9 or 10 year old. That's not what I was expecting. And Gabby, who's now my 17-year-old hormonal girl, is, oh, I get a sister. I was like, no, like, can we divert to this is the plan if something should happen to mommy? I said, there's lots of things. Like, you guys are going to have to help me change diapers. And, you know, I had to have a C-section hysterectomy. Like, I knew I was going to be down. And, like, and then we're going to have a NICU baby. And, oh, like, all these things, right? I was like, you guys have to change diapers. And Aiden's like, I'll do it. I was like, oh. They're still close to this day, which just warms my heart. But, so she ended up coming. Never heard from her. Again.
I was about to say, have you ever heard from her? Have you ever like done like, so we have a former guest, Caitlin Plaskett, who's like, her dream is to just like find people online. She can find anybody in 20 minutes. So have you ever tried to find her?
Yeah. So my intended mom lives in Austria. the first, the third intended mom. And she's, I even reached out to her because I was like, well, gosh, why don't I just adopt, let them do a post-birth order and they can take the baby home? Because, and they're like, we just don't have the finances right now. I was like, you don't have to pay me. I don't, like, I never even got any money out of, at all. And so I was like, you don't have to pay me. Just, I could see her. She's with a doula. Like, please, just, they're like, no, we can't do it. So she is an investigator. So she hasn't told me about it in a couple of years now, but she is, yeah, she's alive because she's actually semi-famous. So I say semi.
Does she have children now?
I don't know now. I am afraid. So I lived the first probably 3 to 4 months of my life with my 9-year-old now, living in fear of ninjas coming in my house in the middle of the night and like taking her, you know, and which now like everybody's bonded to her, and especially being a NICU baby, you know, everybody was taking nights at the NICU.
So, it's a special connection for sure.
Yeah. So, so she's still that here. Never heard from her afterwards.
Have you heard of anybody else in this scenario?
Never. Now we hear those nightmare stories, not through our agency, of the surrogate wanting to keep the baby, right? And usually you find that in traditional surrogacy or things like that. Yeah. We don't touch that stuff. So, but you don't ever hear of the intended parents just disappearing. We've had divorces mid-journey. We've had those kinds of things, and life happens and we work it out.
Yeah.
But all the same, never a situation. I don't think anyone's heard of a situation like this. And of course, it has to happen to me.
It literally, when you told me that story, I was like, I have never once ever heard of that happening. That is crazy. And it actually happened to you.
And all the attorneys and doctors had never heard of it either. Never. And I was like, I'm so happy I get to share my experience.
You are making history.
Right. I would hope in a better way, but you know, she's an amazing child. She completely is the opposite of my genetic children. She's loving and kind and sweet. And my genetic children are sassholes. So, there people will come up and she looks just like you. Like to my husband who ended up adopting her. And I was like, just cause she has tan skin and really blue eyes and dark, rich hair. It kind of grows on you, I guess.
That's a remarkable story for sure. Yeah. But I mean, you were the intended person for that to happen to, because you've obviously sailed through it. And I am, of course, dying to know who this semi-famous person is. Maybe on a future episode, we'll have, like, we could start a...
Let's get Caitlin Plaskett on it. She will find this woman in 8 seconds.
Then again,
and she will have a full file for you. Although you may not want that. Yeah.
I could probably Google her.
So, Megan, I am curious in all of the, I mean, I go back to my question about your patients, and you countered with, well, I'm just honest, but I am so curious with all of the patients that you give to your staff and to the hundreds of people around the world that you work with, and in particular, intended parents, who drives you crazy more? People in the surrogacy process or parents of cheerleaders?
My cheer moms are the worst. Uh-huh. If you've ever watched Dance Moms, take that and duplicate it all around the world. And you will hear every gym owner and coach say the same thing. I love this athlete, but gosh, her mom is ruining it all.
That doesn't surprise me at all.
I think I get the warm fuzzy more for my surrogacy part, right? So things happen that are great every day. Some days are hard. But gosh, the gratitude and for my team and what we do and what impact, small impact we made in these people's lives, like matching them up and supporting them through this process is so heartwarming. And then I have to deal with a cheer parent and over stupid little things, right?
Yeah. Yep.
And it's like, is this really, I think that's my mantra of life is how important is this? Is it me or is it them? right? Yeah. Because if it's them and they're venting and that's just how they are, you know what? I get boundaries and I'm the gym owner. So you don't have to, be at my business.
Yeah.
Same surrogacy, right?
Yeah.
There's been plenty of clients that I've fired and then fired us.
Yeah. Right? Yeah.
We are not for everyone. I tell people that straight from the beginning. If you want someone who's going to stand by your side every single day and walk a hard path and you're truthful and honest with us, you know, you got us. Mm-hmm. You got us all day, every day.
So right? Speaking of shitty people, let's talk about the shittiest people of all, children. And I want to ask you the question I ask everybody at the end of every interview, which is, what is your favorite part about being a parent? And what is your least favorite part about being a parent?
So I think it's both the same sometimes.
Totally. Yes.
It's,
The kids are the answer. Yeah.
Plain and simple.
Yeah.
Right. I think for the last 10 years, my life's been surrounded the kids and the connection to me owning the gym. And that seeing their achievements and seeing them proud and seeing them go through their journey of life and see it from their perspective is one of the most amazing things I think of being a parent. I didn't get much of a childhood. I was very, very responsible kid. And it's made me who I am today. It's made me that strong, patient person I am today. And I don't know about patient. That's probably not the best word for me.
Experience.
But I think experiencing a fresh new life, breaking generational curses, right? Because I didn't have the best upbringing, but breaking those generational curses and living their life through their eyes is amazing. Now, the worst part is also almost the same thing. I've created three monsters and I always think, gosh, especially my biological children, they're going to either run a prison gang or really an amazing business one day. And I think my 9-year-old is my saving grace. But they are me. They're stubborn. They are strong. They're independent. That's actually the newest thing from the 9-year-old is I don't need help. I'm independent.
Oh, okay.
All right.
Yep.
Own it.
Yeah. I mean, whatever. Great. I was like, you're not independent near the stove. So
yeah. And can you be independent with a mortgage payment too, please? Yeah. Thank you very much.
Yeah. Chores at least, right?
Yeah.
Clean your own room. That's it. That's all we ask.
Not to mention the recycling and the trash.
Perfect. I don't even ask that. I'm an easy parent. But also they curse. My mouth is awful. And I see that reflection. So I think if I could change anything, I could back up and curse less around my kids, but I won't tell you what their first words were, but they were not appropriate. They were not appropriate. I have videos and videos that my middle child would take of her, the 9-year-old now, cursing when she was a baby and them just laughing and laughing. And I would walk in and be like, stop doing that, guys.
Yeah. Mommy's going to get in trouble. Please stop this. Well, you know what? People either love you or hate you, but guess what? We love you. We love you. And we thank you so much for stopping by and telling us your story. It is fascinating and wonderful. And thank you so much for demeaning yourself by being on our stupid little podcast.
No, I love it. Thank you so much. And, you know, again, I just want to put a plug in for men having babies and look at all your resources. And they're a great educational piece for daddies and people wanting to go through this process. So thank you so much for having me on. I'm so grateful.
Thank you, Megan. So something great happened when my son is a fifth grader, and it means he's leaving his elementary school behind, which is so tough. It really is. And fifth grade is a year of lasts, man. And we do something called Curiosity Shop, which is almost like parents bringing in hobbies and sharing the hobbies with the kids. And so he wanted to sign up for field games. And I very sarcastically was like, so basically you're just signing up for field day. Great. I love it. Meanwhile, you could take my class, which is theater games, which is like, you know.
Yeah. Zip, zap, zop.
Field day, zips head, totally zips heads up. No. Field games, field day for theater kids, right? You know, like, and we know that it's just, and he, so he actually said, well, what are theater games? And I'm like, you know what? It's just like goofing around and trying to make each other laugh. It's just like improv games. And he's like, wait, what's improv? And I'm like, okay, fine. Anyway, but he said, you know what, Dad? For my last year, maybe I'll give that a try. So,
aww.
I'm glad I convinced my absolutely non-theatrical kid to give it a try, that I don't utterly suck.
Yeah.
That was something great. What about you?
So, I know we're recording way in advance, but I am flying to LA next week. And I'm going there for work, so I'll be there for a week for work. But that's not all I'm thinking about. I'm thinking about a six-hour flight ways, yes. all by myself.
It's going to be a spa.
I can hold an iced coffee for as long as I want. Do you know what I mean? Like, yes. I get to watch movies and do stuff, but I can hold, I can have cables protruding for me. I can, I can eat something and finish it and have eaten the whole thing. Like,
you
I can do
nothing and no one will bother your nothing.
I might get bored on this flight. Do you know what I mean? Like, I might get bored. And I'm also going to be in hotels by myself. Like, if there is, like, there's not a level of rotting that I can, like, I am going to just be disgusting for an entire week in a hotel room by myself. And I'm so excited about it.
Our listener and me are so jealous of this.
And that is our show. If you have any comments, suggestions, or general compliments, you can email us at gatriarchspodcast@gmail.com.
Or you can DM us on Instagram. We are at Gatriarchs Podcast. On the internet, David is at David F. M. Vaughn everywhere. And Gavin is at Gavin Lodge in a theater game.
Please leave us a glowing 5-star review wherever you get your podcasts.
Thanks, and we'll bore you next time on another episode of Gatriarchs.
Я русский, я иду до конца. Это мой бой!